day one of training camp. In the books, Dan Quinn spoke before, and I guess Jaden Daniels has either spoken or will be speaking soon. Ben Standing's joining us right now from Ashburn. He'll be with us all week long and a lot more during camp. Ben is on X on Twitter at Ben Standing, and Ben has just launched a Substack column and format for himself. You can find it at lastmanstanding.substack.com, but you can get, you know, a link to it at Ben's X account at Ben Standing. All right. What do you got? First day at camp. First of all, let's go back to yesterday. Are you surprised? Like, I was surprised. I thought he would hold in. What was your reaction when he didn't report and he's still not in? Terry, we're talking about, of course.
Yeah, yes, of course. I mean, I don't want to sit here and say I wasn't surprised. I was wondering, okay, as much as he spoke about it, you know, last week, and clearly expressed his frustration, to then show up on day one, even though the hold-in maybe shows it's, you know, you're frustrated, you're annoyed, you want this, you know, you're feeling a little disrespected, but maybe it's not as big of a deal to an extent if you're holding in. So I was wondering if, like, maybe day one he makes a point that, you know, it's $50,000 fine, but if we're talking about a $30 million a year contract, that's, you know, that's not much. The question will be day two. Like, you know, is he here? Is he checking later today? If you know, we get to day two, day three, then I think this is becoming a bigger deal. You know, obviously the team is taking the positive view right now, and at least publicly, and not speaking ill in any way, shape, or form. So, you know, we'll see. Adam Peter said yesterday that they had, the two sides have spoken a bit, and you know, we'll see how long this goes. You know, it's the fine. I mean, even if you're making a lot of money, the fines of 50 grand a day certainly can add up. And also, this, you know, nobody ever wants this, but I just don't, you know, this team was such a, you know, positive vibes feeling last year. And Terry is a guy who, you know, at a position where you have all these, like, known divas historically, he's the opposite of that. So this feels out of character for kind of everybody. But at the same time, it's the business of football. And, you know, we'll see how dug in both sides are.
On the DEFCON scale, which DEFCON 5 is the lowest state of readiness, all right, that is total peacetime, everything's going to be just fine, up to DEFCON 1, where nuclear war is imminent or has already begun, where are we today on the DEFCON scale?
First of all, the DEFCON scale, it messes me up every time. I appreciate you explaining it. Because
it should be the other way around, I think. But anyway.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense. I don't know, man. I'm going to stay with my five that I've been at, you know, this whole time. Again, you know, I've been saying, wake me up when we get to training camp and the deal's not done. Well, okay, that's now happened. I'm going to give it a little more time, though. I mean, not only is there a long way to go before the season starts, like, for example, today it was basically an OTA. There was not, you know, one day it's not going to change the chemistry between McLaurin and Jaden Daniels and Cliff Kingsbury. It was, you know, they practiced, they did stuff, but this was not a robust session. So it didn't miss really anything today. But, you know, you get through a few more days, and like I said, that becomes more complicated. So I'll stay at a five. You ask me this tomorrow, and he's not here. Maybe you remind me that, you know, the next step is a four, so maybe I'll do that. But I'm still at five. I just still have a hard time believing this can't get done.
So you think that there's a decent chance, it sounds like, that he is, you know, in this evening or in tomorrow morning, and he's ready to take the field tomorrow. Is that with or without a new deal?
Well, I mean, let's be clear. I don't know that at all. I mean, I don't. And even if he showed up, it may be as a hold in. You know, just to avoid the fine and be around. So, you know, until the contract is done at this stage, I'm kind of imagining, you know, he's not going to practice. Now, again, if we start getting into, you know, multiple preseason games have gone by, then, you know, all maybe it's an all bets are off scenario. You know, it's hard to get a total read because the team is not saying much about this at all. When they are speaking, they're pretty positive Yeah, they're taking the high road. They're optimistic, yeah, just like they were about last year. So they're not, this isn't like the Bengal situation where it's obviously it's very, very contentious between Trey Hendrickson and the organization. And, also, again, knowing the people involved, Terry is not somebody who, you think is going to be a huge problem from an attitude perspective or anything along those lines. So that's why I'm sort of staying with, I think this gets done. I'm just saying he could show up tomorrow for a hold-in scenario just to avoid the fines and sort of make the point. But that's what's interesting to me. If he's really out here, not out here the next couple of days, no matter in what scenario, then you have to start taking – I'm going to have to start taking this a little more seriously.
I think I'm taking it more seriously now because I think the combination of last week's 35-minute sound-off and the fact that he didn't post – I think is a real indication that it's not just that they're far apart, but that this has been hurtful to him. He's not happy. And the hard part for us is we don't really know enough to take a side legitimately other than just hunch and history. And I'm just wondering, are you hearing anything on what the delta is between what they offered and what he wants?
No, I mean, not enough to say, definitively it's this. I think I had told you this before. I had heard from somebody who was not part of either camp, but somebody who, I think based on who the person is, who could easily hear some things. And I was told that the Washington's initial offer or initial, point for them was something below T. Higgins, which is around $28.7 million. I don't know if below means just below or below means closer to where Mike Evans is, which is, I think, around a $24 million range. Now, Mike Evans is a hell of a receiver, right? One of the best in the league for the last decade. But, and he took a hometown discount, but it seems like he did a little bit. If they're aiming towards that and saying, hey, Mike Evans is great, you're great, here we go, that's not worth. Right, so if it's that, if they really are down there, that's a problem. If they're at the T. Higgins number, is that good enough? I don't know. Again, if you're the Terry side, you look at DK Metcalf, somebody who was in Terry's class. Terry has outproduced DK Metcalf. He's been more consistent than DK Metcalf. Seattle decided they were willing to trade Metcalf and move on from that, and then he gets a massive deal from the Steelers that. Terry's got to be going, wait a minute. You can't tell me that he's better than me. But as we know, that's not always how these things work. DK Metcalf is the freakiest of freak athletes.
Yeah.
He's younger than Terry. And, T. Higgins is 5 years younger than Terry. And, one of the things when McLaurin spoke last week and I asked him about the notion of age, that he's turning 30 this year, and it feels like that may be one of the issues, he just basically come on, get out of here. I'm not old. I've got, had no injuries, very little wear and tear relative to other players at my age for a variety of reasons. I'm not buying, he's like, people act like I'm walking around with a cane. No. So that's where it gets interesting. And, you and I have said this now 50 times, but what is interesting for us, if we can avoid getting caught up in any potential drama here, is that we are getting to see how Adam Peters and the organization are going to handle these things. And as you pointed out, the 49ers were often, not that Peters was running the negotiation, but they often would take their time, so to speak, with some of their free agents. And these situations would have gone into camp and beyond, deeper. So maybe that's just where we're at. Maybe Adam Peters is going to be a hardline kind of a guy, which we're not viewing it in that way because, he's not an old and crusty guy like a Bill Belichick. He's even if he doesn't say much in press conferences, pretty nice guy, pretty amenable. There's no, almost seems a little bit shy at times. Or he's not arrogant. So it's like, wait, is this guy really going to be a hardliner? I don't know definitively, but that's what's interesting here. And like you said, we don't know the numbers. We don't know the delta between these positions, but we also don't know what's being said behind the scenes and what's the attitude is, is Adam Peters, being pretty forceful with where he's at. I that's going to be with the fascinating angle to learn about once this ever gets done.
Yeah, I'd really, more than even the numbers, although the numbers would speak to this to a certain degree, I'd love to know really how they feel, like what they think he is relative to other number one receivers around the league, because I think that's playing into this as much as age is playing into this. We are talking, of course, to Ben Standing. One more on Terry, and then we'll move to, you know, the first day of training camp practice. Let's just say that we get a week or 2 weeks into this, and it is a legitimate impasse, standstill, you know, and they've given their best and final, and Terry's not accepting it. And we're heading towards Terry playing 2025 on the final year of his deal, and then, you know, franchise tag, extension next year will be the focus. When does he come in? When does he start, you know, being a part of the team? He's under contract. We both know that there's no chance in hell he's going to hold out. You know, there's really, it's a long, long, long shot that the team would trade him. They just wouldn't be able to, at this point, extract enough value back, I don't think. What would be, if this thing doesn't get done, does he come in right before the season begins? Does he come in before the first preseason game? You know, the second preseason game? I mean, I've just thought about, like, the worst case situations, because I think that's it. He ends up playing the final year of his contract, but how does it get resolved?
Yeah, I mean, look, I think it's a great question. You know, again, I'd imagine he would be holding at some point rather than just being completely away from the place. Somebody here told me that, and maybe this was on social media and I missed it, that apparently he's in town and that he was seen at a yoga studio yesterday, Terry. So take that for what it's worth. At least he's around. But
Does he live here or not? Or does he live in Indianapolis?
No, he lives here, and that was one of his points, that, like, hey, I'm making a life here. This isn't just where I work. This is where I'm going to, you know, live and raise a family and all that.
So the fact that he's here is insignificant. He'd be here anyway.
True. That's a good point. but I don't know. I mean, like, the preseason games don't mean much, right? I mean, I don't think he's going to be like, well, I have to at least play a preseason game or two just to make sure that I'm good to go. I doubt that's going to be the case, so that wouldn't be a deal. I mean, if he's going to play the season, you would think he's got to be looking at it at some point like, okay, I need to put my best self out there, because I'm hopefully getting another contract with somebody else then next off season. So I don't know, man. I mean, does he show up before the Ravens joint practice? Well, my brain honestly can't even wrap around that level of situation here. I mean, we were joking earlier with somebody about, hey, does anybody want to talk about a McLaurin for Micah Parsons trade? And obviously joking. So, if this thing goes longer, we're going to start coming up with.
Dallas would never make that deal.
No, of course not. But I'm just saying, like, you know.
Some fans listening that would say, I would never make that deal. I want Terry, not Micah Parsons. You'd have to give up so much more than Terry to get Micah Parsons back. And Dallas already has Pickens and CeeDee Lamb, so.
Yeah. No, I mean, like I said, we were just joking, but it's the fact that we got to that point of a joke of, like, oh, boy, are we really going to start going down this route? And, I don't know. I can imagine fake trade alerts are coming if this, by the end of this week or maybe sooner, he's not here.
Yeah, I haven't even thought about which teams really desperately need a wide receiver. There are a few for sure. All right, let's turn the conversation towards other matters. First day of practice today. Before we get to that, I didn't ask you about this yesterday, and I have not talked to you about this off the air. Did we learn yesterday that Ben Sinnott had off-season shoulder surgery for the first time?
We did not.
Oh, you knew that?
No. Oh, for the first time. Meaning, No. Yes, we didn't. We didn't know that. You know, he was held out. Not held out, but when he was doing OTAs and minicamps, he was wearing. Even though there's no contact, really, he was wearing a non-contact jersey. He was out there participating, but he was not he wasn't doing everything per se. So, no, we knew something was up, but not definitively that.
Okay.
Excuse me.
Yeah, because Quinn said it yesterday, and I looked it up because I did not remember any sort of report on that, and it wasn't anywhere. He injured his shoulder in the Tampa Bay playoff game, but there was no report anywhere that I could find that he had had off-season shoulder surgery. I pointed out that Quinn kind of went to him a couple of times in two different answers, and sometimes that can be a bit telling. I'm not sure if it is or isn't. Well, only time will tell. But maybe the expectations for him are high this year.
For Sinnott?
Yeah.
I mean, I think he's in an interesting position because I think from a, obviously it was a relatively quiet year for somebody that was a second-round pick, but that was in part because the two guys that were playing ahead of him
sure.
played every single game, and Zachers obviously had a really productive year. Sinnott would be the guy of the future. I mean, certainly over Zach Ertz. I don't know how much he's playing again this year if Zach Ertz doesn't get hurt. But, there does become a point of like, hey, if Zach Ertz can do these things, couldn't a younger guy do them maybe a little bit better or with a little more explosiveness? Because Zach Ertz is pretty much a catch and, hit the ground kind of a guy. But I think one of the things with Sinnott is, he's this weird sort of hybrid player, an H-back, fullback, a tight end. What is he as a route runner? I think that's something they were hoping to he would improve upon this offseason. I thought he looked pretty decent during OTAs and mini camps. Again, you got to set the scene for it's not the most competitive of situations, but I thought he looked better there. I just think he's in a there may be expectations for him, but unless again he shows so much that they're willing to start sitting Zach Ertz, who became a reliable target for Jaden Daniels, then I don't know how he's getting on the field a ton. That would be my only concern. But, yeah, I don't think they've lowered their expectations on him. It's just a matter of how do you find a way for him to get on the field.
How's Noah Brown doing?
Yeah, so Quinn was asked about that today. And, because it's this time of year, they don't have to give us any specifics on injuries. Quinn was pretty vague on that, but said, from the when Brown got hurt in the mini camp and there was some concern from that, he's now saying that he'll practice, but it's going to be a little bit of a ramp up. He's probably not going to practice every day to start. He's still kind of working himself back. I mean, I think it's a knee, but obviously it wasn't an ACL or anything on those lines because that's a whole other deal. So it doesn't sound like it's worrisome in terms of the season, but this is a player who unfortunately gets hurt like every year. And this is why he showed some good promise last year here. And then he gets the freak kidney injury and misses the rest of the season. There were times when he was with Houston where you're like, oh boy, fantasy football players. Remember a couple years ago, Noah Brown was, and then, things went sideways and that's, if it was a different player, you might be like, all right, well, it doesn't sound like it's a huge deal. But with this player, I don't think you can ignore the possibility that it leads to, a lingering issue. I'm speculating throughout the season. I think it's possible, again, just based on his history. But, hopefully he's fine. And, if they need to ease him in, so be it. But, so I think we're just going to have to wait and see a little bit and how quickly he's able to get out there and play with any consistency.
And Quinn also, we're talking to Ben Standing, of course, Quinn also addressed Sam Cosmi and the possibility he's ready to go week one. What did he say?
Yeah, he said that Cosmi's, recovery is going great. And that is a possibility. It's sort of Quinn talking out of both sides of his mouth here. He said multiple times, we're not going to skip a step. He said this with other players off injuries. We're not going to skip a step. We're not going to rush anything. Well, if he's back week one, he's making a remarkable comeback because his surgery for the ACL was like mid to late January. Typically, the early return for that type of injury is 9 months. 9 months is like October. Not week one. So that seems to me to be a bit aggressive. That said, Cosmi was out here on the side field with the training staff and he was running around and running around in the field without getting hit is different, but he looked, he looked comfortable. He looked like he was doing fine with that. So it's good to see that he's moving forward, but I don't know. I'm not, we'll see if my I'd be surprised if he's week one available.
All right, your phone was starting to break up there, but let's try to get one more in. Just tell me what you saw today. I just read your tweet about a Jaden Daniels throw. You had a lot of capital letters in that tweet. Observations day one.
Well, like I said, it was more or less a, you know, a fancy OTA, so not a ton to get into. Even things like, you know, I can't even tell you like lineups. I don't think any of that really matters much on day one. But that said, yeah, they do their position drills and then they go out to 11-on-11s. Debo Samuel runs a fade from the slot, crosses over with another receiver, gets himself in a 1-on-1 matchup with Tyler Owens. That's obviously a favorable one, you'd think, right? And Samuel has a baby step on him, but there's nothing there. There's no space for Jaden to just, you know, loft the pass there. It's beyond pinpoint. This is like guidance system level targeting. And the ball somehow Debo puts his arms up for like an over the shoulder of the catch, and it's as if the ball was already there because it was that perfect of a throw. And you're just like, you got to be kidding me. So it was literally the first pass he threw in an 11-11. So we've all seen it to the degree that we saw last year. I don't know if any of us were like, well, that's stunning. But on the other hand, you're like, you got to be kidding me. The first pass, and it's to a guy who has no chemistry, you know, didn't play with last year. This isn't a chemistry thing either. So it was pretty impressive. He looks as
And the line did a good job against T.J. Watt.
Say that again.
In the line held up against T.J. Watt on the play.
Exactly.
Okay, what else? Any other major observations?
Not really. I mean, it was just wild to see Von Miller out here. You know, to have Von Miller and Bobby Wagner ask Jeremy Reeves about that. He's just like, dude, like, you know, I've been in the league for a while, but when you have two guys like that, not just one, but two, to be able to see what they do, pick their brain, it's just a remarkable opportunity. And, as I think we talked about yesterday, how their defensive line rotation or the front seven rotation goes will be really fascinating. And it's way too early to assess, but, you know, having a Von Miller out there, one of the premier pass rushers of all time, is it's going to be a really interesting to see how that works and how they play together. Like I said, I don't want to oversell anything that happened today, which really wasn't that much, but that's okay. I mean, it's not expected to be that much. You know, we'll get to the end. I think we get through this week and then I think things start to ratchet up, and you know, that's when we'll start to be able to see, okay, what lineups are happening, who's lined up where, you know, how is player X, Y, or Z doing. I think that's when it gets more interesting. Right now it's just, you know, getting a feel for each other, getting a feel that, you know, to get back on the field, make sure you're in playing shape. And then obviously we're on Terry Watch. That's, remains the biggest thing.
Yeah, Terry Watch is the number one thing. By the way, real quick trivia question for you. Let's see how much you're studying the roster as you prepare for your multiple iterations of your final 53. Who's the oldest player on the team right now?
Is it Von Miller? I'm trying to think if there's somebody. Is it Tress?
Nope.
Okay, who is it?
Josh Johnson's 39 years
old. Oh, sorry. You know what? That's on me. I was not thinking about him.
We had a long conversation about Josh Johnson like a week and a half ago. I think he was signed because I think he's eventually going to be on this coaching staff. What'd you say,
Kevin? My memory is my wasted youth has ruined my memory. I'll just leave it at that. So I don't remember anything. But I remember I was watching Josh Johnson today throw the ball. I mean, I don't know if this is correct, but I guess it can't be because we don't know for sure the 53. But like, if you tell me that they're the oldest team in the league by the time we get to
They're the oldest team in the league right now on their 90. And I think their projected 53 will be the oldest team in the league. But you know where they're not old? At quarterback.
Yes.
That's good news.
Starting
quarterback.
Yes. Again, it's such a weird deal. They are a contender whose roster is still in need of work. And that's why they're having to bring in some of these older vets, because as we know, multiple draft classes didn't produce much. And they're having to fill in the gaps. And now, you know, to try to get to the next level, you got to bring in some guys who can play.
All right. Thanks. Appreciate it. Again, Ben is now writing on Substack. So go to Ben's X account to get linked to his Substack reporting and columns, which he will be writing, per usual, I'm sure, very prolifically. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Thanks. I'll just say quickly, there's a sale on the subscription through the rest of the week, so if you want to get in, this is obviously the best time to do it.
Perfect. At Ben Standig, everybody. Last Man Standig podcast. I'll talk to you later. Thanks. Ben Standig, everybody. When we come back, our guy Denton Day. I love Denton. Denton, you know, longtime producer of this show. Miss him terribly. He's doing great, but he's out at training camp doing some work, and he texted me. He said, I got a couple interviews for you if you want to run them. 90 to 120 seconds, a minute and a half to 2 minutes with Quan Martin and Jalen Lane after training camp day number one. So we will play both of those for you when we come back. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com. So Denton Day, the former producer of this show, has been out of camp today. And he may be out there on other days. He'll be sitting in on this show for me a few times in the next coming few weeks. But he recorded quick interviews with Quan Martin and Jalen Lane, their fourth-round pick from Virginia Tech. Here's the conversation between Denton and Quan Martin after practice today.
All right, standing here with Quan Miller. Quan, how do you feel to be out there, man? First day of training camp, getting out there, how do you feel?
I felt good, man. Just glad to be back, be out there with the guys, man.
How's your body feeling?
I feel great, man. I did the best I could getting in football shape this offseason, so I'm feeling good.
You got a bunch of guys out here. Everyone seems to be healthy. What's it like kind of learning some of the new guys and working with some of the guys that you played with last year?
I just continuing to build that chemistry, man, and just working with the new guys, just getting a feel for their game, communication, play style. I think everything is, you know, being able to show out here when we working together as a team.
Second year under, you know, defensive coordinator Joe Witt. What are you hoping to work on this year to get you guys ready to go for week one?
I miss a lot to work on, man. You know, it's day one. Like you said, second year under Coach Witt, man, is just get more familiar with the defense, just finding ways to make plays and just find little holes in the defense.
Yeah, we've seen a little bit of Trey Amos, obviously, as a rookie. What have you seen from him so far?
Man, he's been great, man. Just his football knowledge, his instinct, you know, just the way he played the game and understanding the game.
Quan, appreciate it, man.
Quan Martin with Denton after practice today. Quan Martin, Will Harris, starting safeties. No more Jeremy Chinn coming up for this year, and I thought Chinn had a really good season. There are others in the mix. I think they like Percy Butler. I think there is some love for number 40, Tyler Owens. But Quan Martin and Will Harris, you know, pencil them in, you know, right now, barring injury, as your starting safeties. And I think corner will be, you know, where the focus will go. You know, what does Lattimore look like? I do think that's one of the big storylines of camp, and we'll get into some of that, you know, tomorrow and on Friday. I think what Lattimore looks like and, you know, how he adapts to year two and having more comfort with the system than coming in midway through the season last year. God, his health, his availability, his play is going to be huge. And then, you know, is it Jonathan Jones on the other side, or is it Mikey Sanders still on the other side, or does Sanders still move inside? Trey Amos, look, I've said this several times during the offseason. It's rare. You know, the Pat Surtans and the Sauce Gardeners of the world are the exceptions to the rule. Corners typically take time. You know, they typically do not make their significant, you know, contributions to the teams that draft them in year one. Maybe Trey Amos will be different. You know, he was projected by many to go in the first round and ended up going late second round. And everything that's been said about him so far has been positive. But let's be fair, he is not lined up against CeeDee Lamb or A.J. Brown or Devontae Smith or Malik Nabers in an actual game yet. So going to be really hard to, you know, evaluate Trey Amos until real games begin. That's one of those positions, man. You don't know until real games begin. Not to mention, it's a hard position from a scheme standpoint. It takes time. I think the best case for them in the secondary is Will Harris is every bit of what Jeremy Chinn was. Quan Martin plays the way he did towards the end of last year. And you end up with a healthy and very highly productive Marshawn Lattimore, and maybe even a Jonathan Jones on the outside with Sanra still being able to play inside. Sanra still is going to be versatile. They'll be able to use him in a lot of ways. Obviously, he proved he could play on the outside. This was Denton after practice today with fourth-round draft pick, wide receiver slash punt returner, Jalen Lane.
Staying here with Jalen Lane, first day of practice out here, man, training camp in the NFL. How'd it feel?
Man, it felt amazing. You know, I'm just extremely blessed to be a part of the organization, blessed to be out here. You know, it was a good first day. You know, a lot of guys competing, and that's what you like to see.
What'd it feel like getting out there and catching balls from Jaden Daniels now that we are officially in training camp?
Man, it felt good, man. It felt just like OTAs. You know, it's just, you know, we're playing football, it's the biggest thing, but, you know, just having fun, competing, it's all good.
What's been the process of learning this NFL offense for you the past few months?
Yeah, man, you know, I just kind of attack it head on. You know, the coaches, they do a great job of, you know, extra meetings, extra walkthroughs, making sure, especially me being a rookie coming in, just picking up the offense, trying to master it, and, you know, getting it down fact. So it's been really cool.
What's it been like to be in a room with a guy like Deebo Samuel, who's been really successful at this league for a long time?
Yeah, it's amazing. You know, he's, you know, a guy that's, you know, coaching me up after every single play. You know, that's just the type of guy he is. And, you know, it's a blessing to have him in the room. You know, me and him, both of them in South Carolina, is pretty cool, too. So kind of got them roots.
We know what you bring on special teams. How excited are you to get out there and start to show everyone out here what we know as fans you're capable of?
Yeah, man, you know, that's the biggest thing, my mindset coming in. You know, I'm just trying to, you know, prove my worth to my teammates, most importantly to the coaches, and, you know, just earn respect, earn trust. That's what I'm trying to do.
Jalen Lane, who the most excited coach when they drafted him in the coach's room, or, you know, among the coaches on the staff, was special teams coach Larry Izzo. They had him as the number one punt returner in this draft. And even though, you know, depth charts may not reflect it at this point, Jalen Lane, barring injury or barring, you know, they were wrong, will likely be the week one punt returner against the Giants. I'm not saying that he won't be on the field offensively, because you can use Jalen Lane in many ways. By the way, not too dissimilar similarly to Deebo Samuel. There's a lot of versatility there with jet sweeps in the backfield. Certainly, you know, could he take Diami's place as a deep threat or as a bubble screen guy? Yeah, but there's a lot of receivers there, even without Terry there. Debo's going to be a part of the mix. Noah Brown's going to be a part of the mix. We hope Luke McCaffrey in year two takes a big jump. There are veterans like Gallup and KJ Osborne. But I think Jalen Lane, you know, I'm going to be very surprised if we get to preseason games and he's not back there, so that they can get some comfort level with him as a punt returner. And then, you know, week one, I think that's what they had him penciled in as when they picked him, more so than anything on offense. And again, I'm not saying that he's not going to be a part of the offensive plan, but I think that he will be back there when hopefully the defense forces the Giants to punt a few times in week one. Thank you, Denton. That was good stuff. We'll try to do some of that every day with Denton. And we'll get a player or two or some coaches on between now and the first preseason game against the Patriots a week from Saturday night. 2 weeks from Saturday night. 2 weeks from Saturday night is their first preseason game. By the way, keep in mind, another thing just to wonder about is, did they find the answer at kicker, you know, in Matt Gay, in signing Matt Gay? Because we know what the kicking situation was last year. And, you know, as happy as I was to see Zane Gonzalez doink one in Tampa, between Seibert and York and Gonzalez, and remember they had Greg Joseph in there for a game as well. You know, too many missed kicks, too many crucial missed PATs, especially from Seibert in that Dallas game in particular late in the season. Matt Gay's the new kicker, and they given the number of close games they played last year, and then looking at the schedule, at least the way it looks right now, they're going to need that guy to be huge in 2025. All right, when we come back, Dan Quinn yesterday was asked about sort of the next iteration of Jaden Daniels. You'll hear what he said, and we'll talk about it. Also, Stephen A. Smith said something about combining Baltimore and Washington as it relates to a stadium. We'll react to that as well. That's next. Kevin Sheehan Show, the Team 980 and the Team980.com. There's news on the stadium front, the RFK deal front. It comes from Mark Seagraves, Channel 4, who's reporting that Phil Mendelson, the D.C. Council chair, has reached an agreement with the team to adjust the financial terms of the stadium deal, that was negotiated by the mayor's office and announced all the way back in April. Mark Seagraves reporting that Mendelson and the city council, who they've been talking to the team, and they've been trying to get the deal that was cut by the mayor tweaked to benefit DC even more. So they are adjusting some of the terms of the deal. And according to Mark Seagraves, this opens the door for the city council to vote on the stadium deal in a matter of days, likely after the upcoming public hearings next week. So that's good news. Now, in terms of what the adjustment to the financial terms are, there was not any information specifically in this story from Mark Seagraves other than to say the details of those changes are not yet clear. But it does look like, at least according to Mark Seagraves, we've had Mark on the show before, Channel 4, that the city council has tweaked the deal, reached an agreement with the team, and they'll be ready to vote on this sometime next week. That would be incredible for everybody. Wanted to just play one of the sound bites that we didn't have a chance to talk about on yesterday's show from the Peters-Quinn press conference. Quinn also held a presser this morning, but he was asked about sort of the next iteration of Jaden Daniels and what does that look like. Here's what he said.
This question's for Dan. Obviously, your rookie quarterback, not a rookie anymore, Jaden Daniels, had a pretty good year last year. So what's the next step, the evolution of Jaden Daniels? What does that look like?
Yeah, I think more growth. And one thing I've learned over the year from Jaden, man, there's no limits on him, you know, because this is somebody that absolutely is a savage from a work standpoint and just absolutely puts it in. So the skill work, the techniques, the knowledge of the offense, all of those things are going to be enhanced. And he's thrown himself an excellent offseason. We had a good conversation on the phone just the other night, chopping it up about the team, the summer, the offseason. And you can feel his energy. And just walking out here, you know, when you walk into our building, there's a lot of energy with our team. And he's right in the middle of all that. But I would never mistake him for not doing anything other than absolutely emptying the tank to go for it.
So, you know, a lot of emphasis on just the grinder that he is, the worker that he is. But he said something, and I want to add to it because we've talked about, like, where do you see, you know, Jaden needing major improvement? Like, for us, most of us, it's like there's not going to be anything he does in 2025 where we say, oh, my God, he's so much better at that than he was as a rookie. I mean, there wasn't anything that he wasn't exceptional at as a rookie. But, you know, there are some, you know, apparent footwork, some slight footwork, you know, issues that they wanted him to improve on. And then the thing that, and I had this conversation with somebody probably a month ago, and I forget if I've actually brought it to air or not. But I think the thing that they are hoping takes a big jump, and not that they said it was a weakness last year, but you heard in that answer that he said, you know, the skill work, the techniques, the knowledge of the offense, all of those things are going to be enhanced. you know, the knowledge of the offense can actually increase the playbook. Not that it was ever limited by any stretch of the imagination, but there can be even more put into this offense for a second-year quarterback. And the thing that got mentioned to me maybe a month, month and a half ago was there was growth throughout the year with him adjusting to defenses adjusting, not week to week, but play to play. You know, the calls that defenses would make, the checks that defenses would make may have been a little bit more problematic early in the year, but he adjusted and grew significantly in being able to counter what the defense was doing, recognizing what defenses were doing pre-snap, even more so. So, you know, talking about the knowledge of the season, that's going to be enhanced. And I think, you know, and I'm not talking about reading defenses. I'm talking about knowing what defenses go to post-snap. And that he grew significantly on that, and they think he'll be off the charts this year when it comes to some of that. Last thing that I wanted to play before we get out of here. This was Stephen A. Smith talking about an idea that he's had for a while in having Baltimore, the Ravens, Washington, the Commanders, share a stadium.
I've been an advocate, a strong advocate. I've always wanted a stadium in the state of Maryland that mm-hmm. the Ravens and the Washington and the Washington Commanders could share mm-hmm. with a lot of employment emanating from D.C., but still be able to, because, again, you wouldn't have to worry about stuff like this. That's mm-hmm. just my personal opinion. That was the idea that I threw out last year, that the Ravens and the Commanders should actually share stadium. You got a minimum of 17 to 18 weeks where you got games there, plus playoff games and all of that stuff, plus events in the offseason. And you know what? And it's the state of Maryland that you have to deal with instead of this kind of nonsense. But they didn't do.
So I recognize Stephen A. Smith is a very polarizing figure. I've talked a lot about him, you know, in previous years, not a lot recently. I mean, I don't watch Stephen A., but I respect Stephen A. I'm not sure there's anybody that works harder in sports, you know, TV, sports journalism, sports radio, sports podcasting. This dude does everything, and he's always done it. He's always been a grinder, and by the way, incredibly generous as well. But this is an idiotic idea. Literally, there's not one fan of either team that would want this. Maybe there are residents of each of the two cities that might be in favor of this, but no fan would be in favor of this. Not to mention, Baltimore's got a great stadium. What, are we going to share M&T Bank and hoof it to Baltimore? Like, where would you put it? Like, this is, yeah, this was not one of his better, more, you know, intelligently well thought out takes. This would never happen, ever. And it looks like we're now getting very close to the finish line on RFK. Final poll numbers on Team Terry, not final, but updated poll numbers on Team Terry or Team Front Office, about 1,500 votes in, very close. Those that would side with Terry, 51.9%. Those that would side with the team, 48.1%. Back tomorrow. Chris is up next.